Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and surprise, surprise, it's Labor Day weekend, but we're here live. I'm here to take your phone calls, 888-302-3684. We're working overtime on your behalf, but I can't think of a place I'd rather be than right here behind this very microphone, sharing vital health information with you. It's really a pleasure, and thanks for listening. So we got lots to talk about this hour. We invite your calls, 888-302-3684. Our affiliate, WOR in New York, is broadcasting sports. We're preempted locally, so we're talking to all our other affiliates across the country, and there are lots of you, and lots of you listening online. That's another way to do it if your local radio station doesn't carry us. 888-302-3684. And here's a headline from yesterday's paper, FDA to consumers. No antibacterial soaps for you. It's kind of like the soup Nazi on Seinfeld, that famous bit. This is something we've been talking about for a long time, and it's, you know, a day late and a dollar short. We've been talking about the potential hazards of antibacterial soaps. First of all, there's the hygiene hypothesis, which suggests that, yes, we probably should be not living in a totally antiseptic, sterile bubble from cradle to grave, because if we're not exposed to germs, well, our immune systems won't get a chance to mature and develop a normal immune response. And part of the reason why we're experiencing so many allergies and autoimmune diseases is due to the hygiene hypothesis, that if you're exposed to certain infectious agents early in life, your immune system rallies and fights them off. And if you have no challenges, if you have a million vaccines and you're kept in a hermetically sealed environment and mom is spraying disinfectant all over her thing, and you're being coated in antibacterial soap and there's literally no germs on you, that your immune system, finding no targets outside you, will turn against the self. And that's the basis for autoimmunity and allergy. And allergy, in effect, is an inappropriate reaction to something innocuous like cat dander or pollen. And the body fights like crazy against these things as if they were menacing external invaders. And perhaps if you'd been exposed to some more bugs earlier in life, you wouldn't have that problem. Okay, so number one, hygiene hypothesis. The other thing is these things are downright toxic. These antibacterial ingredients include triclosan and triclocarban. According to this new edict, companies will no longer be able to market antibacterial washes with these ingredients because manufacturers did not demonstrate that the ingredients are both safe for long-term daily use and more effective than plain soap and water in preventing illness and the spread of certain infections. This according to the FDA's statement. Some manufacturers have already started removing these ingredients from their products. Triclosan is actually used in 93% of liquid products labeled, quote, antibacterial, antimicrobial. That's 2,000 different products. So this is a big deal. In 2013, FDA issued an ultimatum to soap makers to demonstrate that adding antibacterial chemicals did anything at all to help them kill germs. And it finally said, oh, enough is enough. You haven't shown us any proof that these are any better than good old-fashioned soap and water. And here's another problem. Third problem is that these antibacterial soaps contribute to bacterial resistance. So these bacteria, in effect, become superbugs. They're harder and harder to kill. And this is creating a real public health emergency. So, in fact, some data suggests that antibacterial ingredients may do more harm than good over the long term. So there's something called the American Cleaning Institute. I guess that's a consortium of soap makers. They said it's given up fighting over triclosan you know, they're going to live again to fight another day, and they're going to focus on the other ingredients still under consideration because they don't want to give them up. You know, they got a lot of products at stake, and they're selling the notion of sterility to Americans when there really is no basis for believing that these powerful chemical agents do us any good at all. Yeah, no more of these antibacterial soaps. 888-302-3684. Let's talk to David in Creston, Iowa. How you doing?
Fine, Doc. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I just heard the same report on the news right now about this antibacterial cleanser, and I think I'm not sure what it smells like, but I know that it's in everything in here in Iowa. It's on the food and the packages and everything, and I wonder if they're not cleaning that around you know, our vegetables, like washing them off with that stuff, and maybe.
Well, that's actually a good point. Is that, you know, when this may be the tip of the spear that they begin to outlaw some of these you know, disinfectant ingredients that they apply to foods. They're contemplating outlawing some of the disinfectants that are used in hospitals.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production, from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Beware of aggressively treating high blood pressure, because, you know, the question is, how low can you go? When we go too low with cholesterol treatment, the studies show that there may be a greater likelihood that people will survive if they have higher cholesterol. When it comes to diabetes, the diabetes drugs that we're using, lowering blood sugar is one thing, but living longer is another. Many studies suggest that, yeah, we can lower blood sugar, hemoglobin A1C, and we can't make people live longer with these aggressive strategies. When it comes to blood pressure, interesting study, 11,000 Americans participated in a study at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. What they found is that overly aggressive treatment of blood pressure made it more likely for people to have heart damage. In patients who had a diastolic blood pressure between 60 and 69, they said ideal is 120 over 80. That's where you want it to be. But if you get it below that, the second number, 60 to 69, these individuals were 52% more likely to have heart damage as measured by a high-sensitivity troponin test. That's the same test that's used to detect heart attacks. And when it came to the lowest diastolic pressure, under 60, 165 of these individuals had heart disease events like heart attacks. They were 49% more likely to have heart disease and 32% more likely to die of any cause. So, you know, these aggressive ways that we treat blood pressure with multiple drugs simultaneously, not the way to go, surely. And, you know, if you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication and avoiding all these hassles, I've got some exciting news about an effective non-drug treatment. It's the Zona Plus. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure 10% or more naturally. And it's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. So what is it? It is a simple, handheld, smart device. It's beautifully designed, easy to use, that you hold for 12 minutes once a day. and it guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. I'm very excited about this because my patients are using this and listeners are giving us feedback since I've been talking about it. At least 22 clinical studies confirm that regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. And don't worry, it's not going to make your blood pressure go too low. You literally can taper off medication as you see your blood pressure coming down. So here's the deal for Intelligent Medicine listeners. You can try it risk-free. Zona Health offers a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Try the Zona Plus for 3 months. That's a long time. And see if it works for you. If it doesn't, return it for a full refund. And this is a special deal. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company's offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662, or go to the web, tryzonanow.com. All right, this item here is talks about autism in relationship to ultrasound. You know, people these days, I mean, seeing on Facebook, people are posting baby pictures, but the baby's not born. The baby's in utero. It's the baby's first ultrasound. And I remember way back in medical school, this is like maybe 1980, 1981, we heard a lecture from a researcher who was talking about the potential harmful effects of ultrasound in utero. After all, it's a high-energy scan. And, yeah, look, no question, ultrasound is necessary these days because high-risk pregnancies, you really have to do ultrasound. But the concern is the effects of ultrasound in the first trimester when development is just beginning. According to the study, ultrasound in the second and third trimesters, that would be months 3 through 6 and 6 through 9, pretty safe. But, and that is the big but, a study published September 1st in Autism Research studied the variability of symptoms in autism. So it didn't look at whether ultrasound caused autism, but if you were to have an autistic child, whether you had autism, whether you had ultrasound in the first trimester seemed to be associated with a higher degree of autistic symptoms. And that's a big concern. And so the suggestion, they don't know yet whether this is really applicable to all pregnancies or just kids who are at risk for autism. But the researchers need to look at the possibility that ultrasound exposure could contribute to autism incidence and severity. So, you know, you out there, you know, if you're being told you need an ultrasound, okay, look, talk to your doctor, see if you can minimize ultrasound exposure. For goodness sake, don't go to these photo places and get, you know, an ultrasound just for frivolous reasons so you can post a picture on Facebook of your future kid. That's just additional risk that's unnecessary. And this companion story also gives us pause. Higher levels of several toxic metals found in children with autism. You know, we've long talked about the heavy metal connection to heart disease and brain disease. And some doctors who treat autistic kids point to higher levels of mercury as being a potential trigger of the neurological changes associated with autism. And there's also lead, which is, we know, is a contributor to childhood behavioral problems. Attention deficit disorder is 100% conclusively linked to lead exposure. So this is actually a study from a couple of years ago, Arizona State University. Researchers have found significantly higher levels of toxic metals in children with autism compared to typical children. And they conclude that reducing early exposure to toxic metals may help lessen the symptoms of autism. But I think it needs to begin with mom. It's the amount of mercury and lead that may be transmitted in utero that may be a concern. And so part of prenatal planning might be to reduce the amount of mercury that you get from, say, seafood or from dental fillings. And part of an assessment that we do when we do prenatal counseling to women who are either trying to overcome infertility or just getting ready to have a baby is to check for levels of heavy metals and, you know, reduce exposure to some of these things. The autism group had significantly higher levels of lead in their red blood cells, significantly higher urinary levels of lead, thallium, tin, tungsten. And in this particular study, mercury did not figure prominently, but certainly is a potential problem. So the study, pretty legitimate study. It also found that DMSA therapy, a form of chelation therapy, improved some symptoms of autism. The biggest improvement was for children with the highest levels of toxic metals in their urine. This is Intelligent Medicine.
At Wakanaga of America, we have dedicated the past 44 years proudly producing Kyolic, the world's most scientifically researched, best-selling, and odorless aged garlic extract. We begin with 100% organically grown garlic from our farms in California for maximum purity. We age our garlic to perfection in a unique 20-month extraction process to eliminate odor and create beneficial compounds found only in Kyolic. Aged garlic extract has been researched in more than 750 published scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA. Studies have focused on cholesterol, high blood pressure, immune stimulation, and all major cardiovascular risk factors. This is the Kyolic difference. So when you're looking for a supplement for great cardiovascular support, reach for the number one best-selling and odorless aged garlic extract, Kyolic. Please visit our website at kyolic.com. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at fine health food stores everywhere.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And let's take a call now from Sharon. How are you, Sharon?
I'm doing great. I just want to tell you how much I love your show. I'm addicted.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. It's a positive addiction.
Yeah, a positive addiction, yes. My question for you is this. My boyfriend got a very rare infection in his bone, in his collarbone. And it's usually
like
an infection
osteomyelitis. It's called.
No, it was
infection.
Called. Well, it's called T-acnes, and it happens after like shoulder surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea how he got it. He never got a shoulder surgery.
Okay.
So it's kind of odd. Anyway, he just had surgery this past Monday, and they put him on a PICC line for 6 weeks of intravenous.
Right. So in effect, he does have osteomyelitis, which by definition is a bone infection. The organism that's causing it is something called Propionibacter acnes, which is actually the bacteria that's responsible for some acne, and somehow it got under the skin, into the bone, who knows how, you know. Is he a wrestler, bodybuilder? Is he engaged in a lot of contact sports and, you know, anything like that?
He just goes to the gym. Yeah, he doesn't do any, you know, one-on-one contact sports or anything like that. It's very odd. They had no idea. And they asked him if he was a drug user or an IV user.
Oh, my God,
He's not. But my question for you is, what kind of probiotic should he be on? Like, because I really wanted him to be on a probiotic while he's doing this PICC line. And they put him on something called Align.
Right. Okay, so that's actually good that they are now recommending that they take, you know, the that individuals taking high-dose antibiotics take a probiotic. And a line is what conventional doctors are prescribing these days. And it's a product that is actually in yogurt now. And it's kind of like, it's like the sort of like the, you know, when calcium was popular, Tums was what doctors would tell you to take because it was a commercially available calcium that was very popular, not particularly high quality, but, you know, they knew about it. The same thing, you know, with, I think a line works. I think there's some studies behind it. It's mostly helpful for irritable bowel, so it should protect against the adverse effects that occur when you kill off good bacteria in your intestinal tract. I prefer a higher quality probiotic. I like the Dr. Ahira's probiotics. You know, generally, if you're taking antibiotics, I would go high. I would take 2-3 times daily for a while away from the antibiotic. If you take an oral antibiotic or intravenous, interestingly, intravenous actually does affect the gut, but to a lesser extent than taking oral antibiotics. So he may be at lower risk of developing something like C. difficile, which is a hospital-acquired infection that often occurs in people who take antibiotics. You know, alternatively, he could take something like Saccharomyces. Saccharomyces is available under the brand name Florastore. Florastore is, you know, Saccharomyces, which is actually a fungal species that helps prevent yeast from developing in the gastrointestinal tract. It's kind of a fungus that prevents a fungus from occurring. But, I, you know, in a pinch, a line will do. I just, you know, one pill once a day, that's not going to be enough. Just, you know, go a little higher, 2-3 times a day should help to protect him from, you know, from getting irritable bowel or diarrhea or, the worst case scenario, C. diff is no fun when you take antibiotics. Okay? And I hope he recovers. And he's going to have to do that for several weeks, for like 6 weeks, right?
Yeah. Right now it's scheduled for 6 weeks.
Okay. So, you know, hopefully it'll turn out okay.
And okay. Well, thank you so much and keep doing what you're doing. I really learned so much and I try to teach my friends as well.
Well, thanks. That's what we're trying to do, getting the word out. And I officially deputize you as a barefoot doctor to go out there and share some of this health information. Thanks for listening. Let's talk to Suzanne in Queens, New York. How you doing?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. Long-time listener. Love your show.
Thank you.
But I'm a little confused about something. I was listening to one of your podcasts. I don't remember which one it was. It was a while ago.
Okay.
And you had somebody on there that was talking about glutathione. Mm-hmm. And he was very alarming because he was saying how it causes cancer and everything. So I Googled
really?
A lot of his
I don't even recall that. I don't recall that. It's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, something as dramatic as that, I would go, you know, I might even challenge him saying, you know, I don't believe that, and I give glutathione.
Well, I was waiting for you to challenge him because you were on there, and you didn't. You were just, you weren't rude. I mean, I'm not saying you would have been rude if you challenged him, but you were very polite. You just let him talk, and you listened and everything.
Yeah, sometimes I think I'm too polite. I got to get mean.
Well, anyways, but you know what? I did Google some of the information that he had said, and there does seem to be a lot on the Internet about glutathione and about cancer and everything. And I was just wondering.
I've never seen it. I mean, I tell you, quite frankly, if you have that kind of information, please, you know, send it to radioprogram@AOL.com, and I'll take a look at it and I'll evaluate it. And what we'll do is, if you listen to podcasts, we'll address that on a future edition of Q&A with Layla, because I'm curious. I've never heard that glutathione could promote cancer. I mean, in fact, there's evidence that it might prevent cancer. It's a wonderful antioxidant, and there's no reason to suspect that it would in any way promote cancer or be dangerous. It's a wonderful thing for people with neurological problems. It's a wonderful thing for patients who experience chronic fatigue syndrome. Those patients benefit from glutathione. So I think you're picking up on it. And sometimes, frankly, you know, this is an interesting question because people ask me sometimes, why on your show did a guest say something and you on another show said something else? So they seem to contradict myself. It's not everybody who I have on my program agrees 100% with me. That would be impossible. And I sometimes give airtime to people who have different views, and sometimes we'll mix it up a little bit. I'll challenge them. But sometimes there will be contradictions, and for people who have you know, difficulty reconciling those contradictions, it can be painful. You know, somebody who says, you know, You can eat as much soy as you want. And, you know, another person who says, no, no, soy is poison. But, you know, that's the nature of this field. There are some controversies and there are going to be some contradictory statements because not everything is rocket science or etched in stone yet. But that's one I want to track down because you tell me glutathione, some people say it promotes cancer. And by the way, not everything that's said on the Internet or promoted on the Internet is valid. There's no bar whatsoever for putting a blog up or, you know, a story or an opinion up on the Internet. You know, there's no agency that validates the truth or the scientific validity of things, of statements that are made. So that's kind of what I do. I try to evaluate what's out there and share my expert opinion with patients. But I thank you for pointing that out. Thank you for calling, Suzanne. 888-302-3684 is our number. And this item I find very interesting. It's a big, big, big study published by Advera Health Analytics and Atlantic Information Services. Okay, so why am I saying that? Well, this is a study that is actually, it's kind of inside baseball for insurance companies so that insurance companies can cut costs. I mean, they don't want to pay out. They want to pay less. And it's in their interest to reduce adverse effects of drugs or to suggest that doctors use less drugs that have adverse effects. So this is entitled The Cost and Impact of Adverse Events, Anti-Inflammatory Drugs. Now, this is a little misnomer because when I read it, I thought, okay, anti-inflammatory drugs, that would be like, you know, Advil, ibuprofen, maybe prescription non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug like Naprosyn. But no, it's about really potent anti-inflammatory drugs that are also referred to as biologics. They include Cimizza, Enbrel, Humira, Otezla, Remicade, Simponi, and Stelara. Stelara lately is being touted for treatment of psoriasis. So these are all inflammatory disorders, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, and many itises are treated with these powerful anti-inflammatories. They're really immunosuppressive medications. And so this company undertook a study. They say that side effects from these drugs cost the healthcare system roughly $368 million per year. That adds an average of 2.4% to the cost of covering these drugs. So in addition to these drugs being extremely expensive, sometimes costing tens of thousands of dollars a year, you also have to account for the side effects that drive costs up. Use of these seven drugs is soaring. In 2014, there was an 8.5% increase in prescriptions over the previous year. It seems they're mostly being prescribed for things like rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's, and now psoriasis and other inflammatory conditions. Okay, what are some of the side effects? Well, they say that some of the side effects aren't even labeled on the drugs. They're unlabeled adverse events. They're side effects that are not formally recognized or disclosed on the drug's warning labels. They can be discovered only by mining post-market data. In other words, they approve the drugs, and they don't tell you about the side effects. Then after the drugs have been in use for several years or sometimes decades, they say, oh my goodness, these drugs have unleashed an epidemic of whatever, unforeseen problems. So take, for example, staph infections. When you use an immunosuppressive drug, your risk for infection goes up. And they're not typically thought of as an adverse effect of an anti-inflammatory drug. And there's no mention of this possibility on the drug labels. But Advera, the company that ran the study, estimates that these infections, which are caused by anti-inflammatories, cost health plans over $50 million in the 5 years from 2010 to 2014. It's the costliest side effect associated with this drug class. So, you know, as these drugs get used more and more, and now they're being mainstream for psoriasis. Psoriasis, which really is a lifestyle condition, really amenable to diet modification, weight loss, certain anti-inflammatory supplements. They say that 65% of the potential problems were incompletely reported, according to an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So they bury the side effects don't tell you about them. And then when you have them, they go, that's impossible because the drug is not known to do that. But yes, indeed, it can cause that. So what's cool about this study is that the authors underscore the importance of lifestyle changes. They say that the insurance companies could save a lot of money by recommending things like low-carb diets or intermittent fasting. Practitioners should recommend diets high in anti-inflammatory foods and spices, such as omega-3 rich fish, flaxseed, green tea, ginger, turmeric, and cayenne. And even acupuncture can play a role in mitigating inflammation. After 12 weeks, 70% of patients in a treatment group had improved, as opposed to 14% of the control group in treating Crohn's disease. So 70% improvement with acupuncture, 14% of the control group only. That's pretty significant relief with 24 weeks of acupuncture. And that's a non-toxic approach. So interesting study released by this organization. And we'll provide a link to the study for you as we do each week. 888-302-3684. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
As consumers in the 21st century, we are truly fortunate to have an abundance of choices in our daily lives. But when it comes to digestive health, there should only be one choice. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, easily recognizable in the bright green box on your retailer's shelf. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics stands out among all others. Never freeze-dried, but always live and viable due to a unique 3-year fermentation process, award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics provides the restorative balance needed to support your own exclusive probiotic fingerprint. And that is very important, as no two of us are alike. With over 30 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics takes digestive and wellness support to a whole new level. So look for the bright green box on your retailer shelf today. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ron Hoffman with you. And you know, during the break, I just did a little quick search on the relationship between glutathione and cancer per the call of that nice caller in the last segment. And what I come up with, and although this is a really preliminary check, is a series of articles that suggest that glutathione may be beneficial in cancer. And that, in fact, one specific effect of glutathione is that it helps to reduce damage due to chemotherapy. It's kind of like a rescue remedy. After chemo does its mischief and kills the cancer but doesn't kill you, glutathione can be a rescue therapy to help resuscitate your normal cells. In addition, glutathione can be helpful to fend off what's called cancer cachexia, which is the wasting away that occurs in cancer patients. This from my preliminary check, and I don't see anything to suggest that glutathione is a cancer promoter, but I'll delve into the subject and share my conclusions during one of our podcasts, usually during our weekly Q&A with Layla. Okay, this is a big news because it just came out yesterday in the Times. And when the Times says it, it must be true. You know, I've been saying it for 15 or 20 years, but when the Times finally concludes something, it's a game changer. And it has a lot of people buzzing. A call for a low-carb diet that embraces fat by their science correspondent, Anahad O'Connor. It says that people who avoid carbohydrates and eat more fat, even saturated fat, lose more body fat and have fewer cardiovascular risks. They avoid carbohydrates and eat more fat, but they lose more body fat and have fewer cardiovascular risks than people who follow the low-fat diet that health authorities have favored for decades, and that you, I might add, at the New York Times have been advocating for decades and perpetuating the myth that cholesterol and fat are bad for you. So Times does an about face. Okay, day late and a dollar short, but hey, better late than never. Recent clinical studies in which individuals and their diets were assessed over time have produced evidence that people can sharply reduce their heart disease risk by eating fewer carbohydrates and more dietary fat, with the exception, of course, of trans fats. Those are conclusively bad for you. So no way, no how, trans fats. The new findings suggest that the strategy more effectively reduces body fat and also lowers overall weight. Big study financed by the National Institutes of Health, published in the Annals of Maternal Medicine. They used a racially diverse group of 150 men and women, and they were assigned to follow diets for 1 year. That's rare to get people to stick to a diet for a year. One diet limited the amount of carbs, and one diet limited the amount of fat. And overall calories were not limited. So these were what are called ad lib diets. Eat as much as you want, but watch the fat or watch the carbs. And what they found was quite interesting. Cutting your carbs helps you lose weight without focusing on calories. And that's really important, they say, because someone can change what they eat more easily than trying to cut down on their calories. I hate the diets which have you weighing and measuring. It's so boring. And I don't know, it just sort of takes all the joy out of life. But when they say, just don't eat this, that's off the table. Eat as much as you like of the right foods, the healthy foods, and it works. They say in this article, many nutritionists and health authorities have actively advised against low-carbohydrate diets. It's been thought that your saturated fat, of course, is going to increase, and your cholesterol is going to go up, and then bad things will happen in general. But the new study showed that this was not the case. By the end of the year-long trial, people in the low-carb group had lost about 8 pounds more on average than those in the low-fat group, and they had significantly greater reductions in body fat than the low-fat group, and improvements in lean muscle mass, and even though they didn't increase their levels of physical activity. And here's the thing. In the low-fat group, they lost some weight. They didn't lose as much weight as in the low-carb group. But in the low-fat group, they appeared to lose more muscle than fat. And that's not good, because when you alter your fat-to-lean ratio, it's more about your fat-to-lean ratio than your overall weight. And if you lose muscle, that ain't good. The high-fat group follows something of a modified Atkins diet. They were told to eat mostly protein and fat. They were also allowed to eat foods higher in saturated fat, including cheese and red meat. And so a typical day's diet, that wasn't too shabby. It would consist of eggs for breakfast, tuna salad for lunch, some kind of protein for dinner, like red meat, chicken, fish, pork, or tofu. They didn't say don't eat red meat or cut the fat off your meat. Low-carb participants were urged to cook with olive and canola oils, but butter was allowed too, so it wasn't just vegetable oil. And the net result, people in the low-carb group saw markers of inflammation and triglycerides plunge. Their HDL, which is the good cholesterol, rose more sharply than it did for people in the low-fat group. Blood pressure, total cholesterol, and LDL stayed about the same for people in each group. So, you know, these are clear-cut results that suggest that what we've been telling you about over the years is the right way to go. And if you want to try a low-carb diet or a paleo diet, and you're concerned that it's going to raise your cholesterol, put you at higher risk for heart disease, do not worry. It will not. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.